thanks so much for staying with Sharad and I on Consider This. Let's continue our conversation with consultant infectious diseases physician Datuk Dr. Christopher Lee. He's the newly appointed president of the Malaysian AIDS Council. Christopher, just going on the same vein as some of the lessons learnt, what lessons has our public health response to HIV and AIDS taught us about dealing with this COVID-19 pandemic?
Clearly, it's a very different outbreak, very different infection altogether. COVID-19 is extremely mainstream, in-your-face type of mainstream infection. But HIV is something that we know it's under fringe. It affects certain risk population or marginalized population. So evolving topics sometimes that the public is not really keen to talk about. So I think clearly that's what major difference. COVID is on everybody's lips now, but HIV, maybe not so much. People know about it, but they don't talk about it very much. But I think if there's one similarity, I think would be looking at vulnerable and marginalized groups. I think we knew that in a couple of weeks or months ago, we had issues with migrant workers, documented as well as undocumented migrant workers, quite a number was arrested and tested, and some were found positive. But I had concerns there. I had concerns that this would drive many of these undocumented migrant workers who may be infected, who may carry the virus, underground. And that would hide the infection even more. So similarly for HIV, we learned that when the authorities went looking for them, they ran away. And during the early years of the HIV outbreak, especially among IDUs, intravenous drug users, where I used to work in HKL, many of them would be arrested and they would see DBKL or the police come, they'll run away. They dare not come to hospital. By the time they come to hospital, they are so sick. But at the end, when they are really so sick, they do turn up in hospital. And some of them die in casualty or they die in our wards. So at the end, the outcome is bad all around. Nobody wins. But working through NGOs and also with a change of approach by the public health people and Ministry of Health, things improve over the years. And now the relationship with IDUs and the government, Ministry of Health, has changed, has improved to some degree. And there's more trust. And that's one thing we may learn from the HIV outbreak. When it comes to certain vulnerable groups or marginalized groups, I think enforcement alone cannot do it. It has to be engagement. I understand the law is the law. When we break the law, certain things have to follow. I get that. But I think we can also work on the engagement part, either through a third party, for example, either from NGOs or from CBOs, community-based organizations, to work with these groups to build trust. At the end, we don't want them to fall sick. A patient with HIV dying with AIDS doesn't help anyone, especially now when we have so many good drugs that we can use to treat them and keep them well for many, 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 many years to come.
Christopher, one of the conversations and that's been raised is that we're now the discussions around COVID and the vaccine in particular mimic some of the early days of the HIV/AIDS epidemic, where there's a lot of talk about the vaccine being somehow a solution, and now we've had more than decades long without a real vaccine, and we've learned to live, as as rightly pointed out, we learned to live with the pandemic and allowed people to live better lives with all the treatments available. Do you think that's more likely a scenario for COVID-19 than a kind of miracle drug turnaround on a vaccine kind of narrative?
The vaccine, I think 3 days ago, Hong Kong University reported the world's first documented reinfection. There were talks earlier about these things happening, but this was the first documented one. And this is of concern. So that means this chap was infected a couple of months ago and he got reinfected by a different virus, I mean, the same coronavirus, but from a different strain. And that's a bummer. So in terms of whether the vaccine would work. So yes, that would affect us. But having said that, looking at the amount of the warp speed type of vaccine development we are seeing now, I think it's quite hopeful that we will get a vaccine. The question is whether how effective is it and how long lasting is the immunity. Time will tell. That one we have to just have to wait it out. But I do agree with you, Sharad. At the end of the day, I think for the near future, for the next couple of years, perhaps, many countries in the world will have to live without the vaccine yet, okay. Even when the vaccine is available. Chris, you know, it's a hot commodity. Everybody is buying the vaccine.
For sure.
And Malaysia may be lower down in the pecking order. That's the reality. So I know the Ministry of Health is trying to work with certain countries to get some access. And I do hope we succeed, no question about that. But I think we must also be realistic that if we don't get the vaccine in the same time the Americans do or the Japanese and the Australians do, we have to now learn how to live with this virus for a while. And I think I was certainly hoping the government would extend the RMCO. Maybe you can tweak things here, a little bit here and there, but I think we will have to live as if we are in the RMCO for quite a while to come.
You know, so the appointment, your appointment as president of the Malaysian AIDS Council, I mean, we never congratulated you and the team for this appointment, so congratulations. But it does come at a very challenging time, especially at a time of COVID where medical resources, where financial resources are all being diverted to deal with the pandemic. What is your biggest challenge now heading the Malaysian AIDS Council during the time of the COVID pandemic?
Thank you for spoiling my day. Now I'm getting stressed. Yes, absolutely right. Challenging times indeed, no question. I think money will be a problem. Raising funds, getting funds out there for our partners to get their work done will be a challenge. The government may have less money to move around as well. We hope not, but that may happen. But the other thing that we have, the issue about distancing that we still have to respect. We cannot send our workers out there and expose themselves unnecessarily. Our clients, the people that we work with, the drug users, the men who have sex with men, they may not also be comfortable meeting us. Now, of course, the virtual extension using digital health is something that we are exploring. Some of our clients and risk populations are very open to technology. But unfortunately, there are also certain populations that we deal with who do not have access to this newer technology of digital health. So it will be a hybrid approach. Clearly, we have to go more on the virtual side in terms of it saves money, it saves time, and reach out to more people. But at the same time, we still have to go back to the traditional face-to-face encounters for some of our population. And this, we have to train our staff on the ground how to keep themselves safe. Certainly, we do not want to send them out into harm's way. Our staff falling sick doesn't help anyone.
Sure.
So yes, that's a challenge.
Right. Christopher, you know, the HIV/AIDS pandemic produced a rich vocabulary in terms of thinking about the disease and human society. We think of harm reduction, or we think of the fact that you can live a healthy life with a disease as potentially devastating as AIDS. The question is, you know, what for you would be the success of and measure of our fight against COVID-19? Would it be about reducing deaths? Is it about the lessening the number of positive cases? Is it about testing? Or is it about a balance between the economy shutting down and but keeping things going? What would you, for you, would be the real measure?
I think many countries have learned that, and I think Malaysia and I'm not privy to this high-level discussions now, but clearly going into another major shutdown, like what we did, our MCO, the earlier part of it, is not something the government or the country can tolerate, I think. The important thing now is the minute we have been able to bring the numbers to a controllable level, and there will be clusters here and there, and every day you hear one cluster there, another cluster there. But as long as we deal with this cluster fast enough, life can go on. You and I can still go to the grocery shop. You and I can still go to work. Two of you can go to the studio at the same time and don't have to stay far, far apart. Life goes on with some changes, all right? All of us hate going to the shops and putting our name, picking my sejahtera. It's a bit of pain. Right. But we all have to live with it now. But I think we can accept that inconvenience. We can still live our lives. Mm. Now, very soon, the school's going to open. Very soon, the exams is going to start. The training of doctors and nurses will continue, and that has been stopped for the last couple of months. life is coming back to normal.
Right.
So the important thing for the Ministry of Health, especially my colleagues in public health, is to watch and put good surveillance of the infection, the cases that are out. Detect them fast, contact trace fast, isolate them fast, so that it doesn't explode.
Christopher.
And if we keep that going, like what we have done so far, you and I may continue to live fairly normal lives.
Christopher, thank you so much for speaking with us tonight. We really appreciate your time and your insights. All the best in your new role.
Thank you. Thank
That's
you
all
much.
The time we have for you on this episode of Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutan, signing off for the evening.
Thank you so much for watching and good night.